Crispin, the Cross of Lead, chapters 46 through 50. Hurriedly, I pulled back into the narrow passageway, but peeked out, watching as the soldiers paused. The one-eyed man pointed to a sign of the boot that hung from the building into which Baron John Ball had gone. The moment the building was singled out, I had no doubt as to what John Aycliffe was intending. Wasting no time, I plunged down the narrow passageway between the buildings, clambered up the wall, and slipped down into the garden a second time. This time, however, I didn't pause at the rear door, but yanked it open. I looked in upon a small room filled with benches, upon which sat some seven men, Bear among them. Standing before them was John Ball. "Bear!" I shouted. "Soldiers are coming!" At the sound of my voice, he leaped up and spun about to face me. "Where?" "On the street." Even as I spoke, there was a great crash from the front of the house, the door being broken in. "We are betrayed!" John Ball thundered. "Save yourselves!" There was a wild scramble for the rear door as the men, Bear among them, raced to get out. I had to leap aside so as not to be trampled. Once the men were in the garden, Bear took command. Using his great height and strength, he fairly lifted the men onto the back wall one by one. Once there, they swung their legs over, dropped down, and disappeared. The last to go was John Ball. At the top, the priest hesitated and called, "Bear, don't lose heart. Put your faith in mighty God and me. We'll meet again at the White Stag." Then he too vanished. Bear swung about. "Crispin," he said, holding out his arms. I ran to him. He picked me up and all but flung me to the top of the wall. From there, I looked into a narrow alley in which people were passing, one or two who looked up at me with nothing more than idle curiosity. Farther down the way, turning a corner, I could just see John Ball scurrying off. I looked back toward Bear. He had just begun to climb the wall when the soldiers burst out of the house and into the garden. "Go, Crispin," Bear cried. "Get out of the city. It's you they want, not me." Please stop here and answer question one. I dropped into the alley, but instead of running off, I stood in place. Heart pounding, I strained to listen, trying to guess what was happening on the other side of the wall. What I heard were shouts. "Hold him! Secure him!" Then came the sound of blows. Finally, as though from a greater distance, I heard cries, a scream, more shouts, then no more. Frantic, but hardly knowing what to do, go to the aid of Bear or take care of myself, I hesitated. Guilt and fear engulfed me equally. Unable to abide, not knowing what had happened, I climbed back upon the wall and looked into the garden. It was empty. I swung over it, dropped back down, ran toward the door, and stepped inside. The room where the meeting had taken place was in shambles, nor was anyone there. Opposite the door by which I entered was another open door. I ran through it only to find greater disorder. Several low tables had been overturned, shoes, slippers, and boots in various stages of manufacture lay scattered. I went through another door that led me into the front room of the house. On two trestle tables, shoes and boots were displayed. And here a soldier was standing looking out the broken front door. He turned and saw me. "Halt!" he cried. I spun about and tore back through the rooms I'd entered into the garden. Scrambling over the wall, I made my way along the narrow passageway by the side of the house. Once I reached the street, I hastily looked up and down, saw that it was clear, and ran. Whether or not the soldier came after me, I never knew. All I knew was that Bear had been taken by John Aycliffe. It was as I had feared. We'd been trapped. Please stop here and answer question two. Chapter 47. Desperate to find where Bear was being taken, I raced wildly through the town, more than once taking the chance to stop and speak to strangers. "Did some soldiers holding a large red-bearded man go by?" I asked. Twice, I was told that such a one had just been dragged along. What's more, they were able to point in the direction the soldiers took. I rushed on. Then, as before, I unexpectedly burst into the great square. Though very crowded, I could see a group of soldiers crossing the far side. People were hastily making way for them. Stumbling forward, I wove and dodged through the crowd, tables and stalls, just in time to see the soldiers, with Aycliffe, drag Bear through the open doors of the large building. It was the building I'd noticed before, the one that stood directly opposite the great church. As soon as the soldiers entered with Bear, the doors swung shut. Armed guards, helmets and weapons bright, their livery blue and gold, took up positions before them. Standing there, I was engulfed by alternating waves of rage and helplessness. That it should come to this.
In agony, I made a sign of the cross over my heart and made a prayer for Bayer's safety. Yet, I had little hope that it would bring either comfort or release for my one true friend. If only he had listened to my warning. Then, afraid of being noticed, I stood behind a large man and peeked around him while trying to take measure of where Bayer had been brought. "What building is that?" I asked. "The Furtivall's palace," the man replied, "and may God give grace to her ladyship." I continued to stare at the building as if I might see through the stone walls and discover what was happening inside. But while that, of course, proved useless, I did see a man appear on the second level balcony, the one underneath which the stone lion's heads protruded. It was John Aycliffe. He stood looking out over the square as if in search of someone. As I gazed at him, I had little doubt it was me he was seeking. I watched him, my heart full of loathing, until he turned and went back inside. He had taken Bear to get at me. Not knowing what to do, I made my way back to the Green Man. Though disconsolate, I kept my eyes alert for soldiers. I saw a few, but did not think they saw me. Fortunately, by then I had come to know the town well enough that I reached the inn in good time, but remembering the one-eyed man, I entered through the rear. The house was very quiet. Though I knew I should go and find Widow Daventry and tell her what had happened, I was in too much torment. I felt a need for time alone, to compose myself and think what next to do. Quietly, then, I crept up to the second-story solar. As I had expected, our room was empty, but just to see Bear's sack and hat in one corner moved me greatly. Exhausted, I lay down upon my pallet, my mind churning through a clutter of images, things, and words. Again and again, the main questions returned. What would they do to Bear? What should I do? The truth was, I felt paralyzed. In a spate of loneliness, I felt about inside Bear's sack, found his recorder, and played a melody. It was the first one he had taught me, but to hear it brought such sadness, I put it away. Silence was the only voice that could speak to me. Please stop here and answer question 3.
But as I lay there, I don't know for how long, I became aware of commotion. At first it appeared to come from the street. Before I could determine what it was, I heard a crash that shook the entire house. I sat up, listening intently. Now the tumult, shouts, and cries came from within the building itself. I heard a scream, followed by sounds of crashing, wood splintering, and I knew not what other violence. Leaping up, I didn't know what to do until I remembered the hiding place that Bear had told me about. It took but moments for me to slip the wall board out as he instructed. Then I crept inside the opening, taking Bear's sack and hat with me. As soon as I pulled the board back, darkness enclosed about me. I dared not move. It wasn't long before I heard heavy footfalls burst into the room right beyond my hiding place. "He's not here either," I heard a voice say, followed by the sound of breakage and finally footsteps receding. I pressed my ear against the wall. When I was certain no one was there, I eased my way out. The room had been completely tossed and turned. The little table had been crushed. Straw from the pallet lay strewn about. With extreme caution, I went out into the hall. It was deserted. At the top of the steps, I listened anew. From below came the sound of weeping. Please stop here and answer question 4. Chapter 48. I made my way down the steps. When I came into the tavern room, I received a further shock. The tables had been smashed. Benches were split. The serving counter was overturned. The tankards in which the ale and wine were served lay tumbled about. Many were broken. Amidst the ruins sat Widow Daventry. She was slumped and weeping. Her linen cap lay on the floor. Her hair, undone, hung over her broad shoulder, her broad back. Her smock was torn. Afraid to make my presence known, I stood motionless on the threshold of the room, trying to grasp what had happened. I must have made a sound, for the woman startled and shifted her bulk around. She saw me and quickly turned away, but it was enough for me to see the bruises on her face, her red-rimmed eyes, her hollow mouth from which trickled a spike of blood. She gulped for air and her crying ceased. When I went and stood by her side, she lifted her head, looked at me, and raised her hand, once, twice, as if to pump up words. None came. It was as if she had been emptied of all life. "Good widow," I stammered. What happened here?" "Soldiers," she lisped faintly, "from the palace. They're searching for you." "Will they return?" "Perhaps," she said wearily. Though I quickly decided not to tell her I had been in the house, I hardly knew what to say. If they find me, I asked, hoping she would give me a different answer, what will they do? Kill you, she said. Groaning with the effort, she came to her feet and surveyed the wreckage with a dazed look. When she spied her cap upon the floor, she picked it up and poked her fingers through its rents. Please stop here and answer question 5. Do you know why? I said. Disgusted, she tossed the cap away. Best ask Bear. Bear's been taken, I said. She swung around. By whom? The soldiers. When? Diminished as she already was, my news reduced her even more. Clumsily, she righted a bench and sat down heavily. Her own weight seemed too much for her. Tell me what happened. I told her all. She listened intently, muttering sacred prayers along with profanities below her breath. When I'd done, she said, May Jesus protect him, made the sign of the cross. When her shaking fingers sought her rosary beads, I said, What will happen to him? A loving God will grant a speedy death, she said, squeezing her hands together. Tears began to run down her sinking cheeks again. With a hasty, agitated gesture, she wiped them away. I stood there awkwardly, hardly able to breathe. I said, I heard John Ball cry out that he was betrayed. The woman spat upon the floor. Beware all men who confuse their righteousness with the will of God. They probably don't even know that Ball was there. It's you they want. I warned Bear. She went back to gazing about the wreckage, as if still unable to believe what she saw. Widow, I said, what should I do? At first, she didn't answer. Then she said, you can't stay here. It's too dangerous for you and me. They'll try to get Bear to say where you are, but even if they make him reveal where you are, since they already searched this place and didn't find you, they may not believe him. In any case, Bear will try not to say anything to harm you. He cares too much for you. Then she added, but even the strongest can be broken by torture. Torture? I cried. Tonight, after curfew, she went on, you must escape from town. In the meanwhile, don't even come into this room. Stay upstairs. Did Bear show you where to hide? I nodded. Go on then. That's where you need to be. I climbed the steps and returned to the room. After slipping inside the tiny hiding space, I closed myself in, welcoming the darkness as the only safe companion to my despair. So much bad had happened, and all because of me. Please stop here and answer question 6. Chapter 49. I don't know how much time passed before I heard a tapping on the board that kept me hidden. Open up, came Widow Daventry's whisper. I pushed the board out. In her hands was a bowl of soup and bread. Grateful, I took the food and began to eat, though I was almost ashamed to be so hungry. What have you been doing? She asked after setting down the small candle she brought. Thinking about Bear? She said with a sigh. Well, you might. Crispin, forgive me being so angry with you. God knows it's not your fault. She lapsed into silence for a while. Did Bear ever tell you about me? She asked abruptly. No, I said. 2 husbands, 7 children, none alive. And yet, I live. She reached out and rested a heavy hand on me. Crispin, she whispered. Does God have reasons? I don't know. Head bowed, she began to weep again. I took her rough hand and squeezed it. It was some time before she could compose herself. Cautiously, I said, Good widow, can you read? She looked at me with vacant eyes. A little. Why do you ask? Can you tell me what it says? Here? I held out my cross. She took it and turned it over in her hands. It's from the Great Sickness, she said. I don't have to read it. Bear told me what it says. He did? She nodded. It says, Crispin, son of Furnival. I stared at her. Your Lord Furnival's son. How can that be? Who do you think your father was? My mother only said my father died before I was born, in the Great Sickness. She shook her head. Crispin, for these lords to have sons out of wedlock is common. And Bear knew about me? I managed to say. Yes. And he told you? She nodded. He guessed it from this cross and because of what happened to you. She offered the cross back to me. Please stop here and answer question 7. I took it. What else did Bear say? She sighed. He supposed that your mother was attached to Lord Fernhall's court, that she must have been some young, gentle lady who knew how to read and write. Bear imagined her some beauty, enough to catch the eye of Lord Fernhall. Fernhall must have brought her, no doubt against her will, to your village. But when she quickened with child, you, he abandoned her, leaving orders that she be held in that place, not killed, but never allowed to leave. Because of me? Yes. Why didn't Bear tell me? He wanted to protect you. From what? Crispin, she said. Whatever noble blood there is in you is only poison. Lady Fernhall, who's the power here, will never let you have the name. She'll look on you as her enemy, knowing that anyone who chooses to oppose her will use you and what you are. Does she even know of me? I said, amazed. When the woman said nothing, I repeated the question. If she knows as much as I, she may, said the widow. What do you mean? I cried. Crispin, I cannot be certain, but if the rumor of the time 13 years ago was true, I believe I know who your mother was. She was the youngest daughter of Lord Douglas. Lord Fernhall became infatuated with her. It was the talk of the town. When word was given out that this young woman died, apparently not. What difference does that make? I asked bitterly. She's dead now. But if Lord Douglas knew his daughter had a son by Lord Fernhall, he might make a claim to the Fernhall wealth through you. And if Lady Fernhall knew of you as well, she would do anything to protect her power here. Your connection gives no honor, no position. What someone fears is not you, but that you can be used. Can't you see it? Your noble blood is the warrant for your death. It will remain so till it flows no more. I stared at her. Did Bear know this about my mother? I did not tell him. Why? He thought of you as a son. Why put a greater distance between you? Crispin, if it's any comfort, you're probably not the only possible claimant. Considering Fernival's reputation, you're probably only one of many. The House of Fernhall will want you all dead. But I make no claim. Those who know of your existence fear you will, which is why you must get away as fast as possible and never, ever return to these parts. She reached out and touched me softly on the face with her rough hands. May sweet Jesus protect you, she said before she took her leave. Please stop here and answer question 8. Chapter 50. When Widow Daventry left, I lay back down, and in the closest of the hiding place, I held the cross of lead before my eyes. Though I could see nothing, I stared at it. As I did, I began to see how my new knowledge made sense of the way my mother and I had lived for so many years. Her words about my father, few and bitter. Father Quinnell's saying she could read and write, but never revealing it to me. The way people in Stromford Village looked upon us as different. Aycliffe treating us with such contempt. Her calling me Asta's son, since I was all she had, and that was all she could say. But all the same, christening me secretly with my father's name. No wonder she sometimes clung to me and just as oft thrust me away. I was her life. She cared for me. Yet, I was the cause of her destruction. Please stop here and answer question 9. Thus we were foreigners in Stromford, unwanted prisoners. Then the courier had arrived with his document, probably to announce the impending death of Lord Fernhall. His protection, such as it was removed. Only then did the words I heard in the forest make sense. Am I to act immediately? It is your precise command. Are you not her kin? Do you not see the consequences if you don't? The great danger to us all. The her was Lady Fernhall. To say I had stolen money was merely Aycliffe's excuse to declare me a wolf's head. He sought to kill me because of who I was. No, not who I was, but who my father and mother were. For me, as Widow Daventry had said, They cared not so much as a rooster's tooth. Father Quinnell must have known the truth, and he was killed. Again, Aycliffe's hand. And Bear came to know it, but didn't tell me. He was shielding me from the poison in my blood. Now he had been taken, most likely to be killed. All because of me. No, I had to remind myself. Not because of me or anything I'd done, but because I was Lord Furtival's son. The only question was, now that I knew who I was, what should I do? Because it was clear to me that they had taken Bear to get at me.
Please stop here and answer question 10.